webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for October 2, 2014, coming to you from the GR Studios right here in Nashville, Tennessee, where with Benjamin Franklin we say, we are all born ignorant, but one must work really hard to stay stupid. And here from Houston, Texas, once again, the founder and president of the Gospel Revolution, Mr. Michael Williams. G'day, Mike.
Good morning, Bears Bartlett.
How have you been, mate?
I'm good. It's been beautiful here in Houston. We've got an exciting month coming up, for sure. I have two guests coming this week, both of them extremely interesting people. One is moving here to Houston, and that is Avi Penhalo, who was one of the original church raiders up in northern Illinois a couple of decades back when we were starting the Gospel Revolution. And, oh my gosh, and many of you have heard of Scott Johnson. Well, this is one of the other guys in that group. And so those that have heard Scott Johnson's story, we're going to have Avi changed his name. His name was Steve. I knew him as Stevie, but he is now a minister in the Greek Orthodox Church. So a lot of things. So we're going to put him on the grill, the Bears grill, and see how he comes out.
Yeah.
But I'm looking forward to having him here. He's going to use my spare bedroom as a transition place to move from Colorado to Houston and start his work here downtown Houston. So we're planning on having some great conversations. And then my other guest that is coming, I can only pronounce his first name. His first name is Mong. A very interesting situation.
Mong from Burma via Switzerland.
Yes, and he is father of, his three or four children. I cannot remember at the moment. But he and his wife live in Switzerland. I cannot wait to hear this story because so many people, you know, had to leave Burma because of the violence there. Now, there's been a drastic change, which now Burma is now Myanmar. And if you want to get an update on Burma and Myanmar, of course, the best update you're going to get is when Mong is here, because we'll definitely have him on. And he's only staying here with me for one day, flying in. But Mong's history has been a really wonderful one. I can't wait to hear more because just a few months ago, he started listening to the Gospel Revolution with his family there in Switzerland. And we noticed that there was this tremendous amount of purchases going to Switzerland. So I asked Jeff to follow up on it, and he did. Well, that's how we got in contact with Mong, and he explained his situation, and that after hearing the Gospel Revolution, he is moving his family back to Burma or Myanmar, and because he wants to spread the gospel there. He said no one in Myanmar knows the gospel, no one. So he is convinced of that, so he's going back to share the gospel. We have so many exciting things going on. Moses is out of the hospital. He got several new students out of the hospital.
You know, I was against fixing up his hospital bill. I wanted to keep him in there as long as we could.
You know, it seems that no matter where Moses is, he is a recruiter above and beyond all things.
Moses Garter is a friend of ours in Kenya, for those of you who are just tuning into this show for the first time. These are amazing stories because now what day of the week is Mong going to be with you? Because I have to talk to him.
That is on the 17th. He flies in on the 17th, which is a Friday, and flies out on the 18th. That's the information I have right now. If that should change based on anything, including me being mistaken about what I read, I'll let you know. But I'm real sure that that's when he is flying in. So sometime on Friday evening or Saturday, maybe early Saturday morning, we'll get an interview with him. And so, yeah, we should be just about at the end of this series by then, and that may work out just great.
Oh, we'll interrupt it if we have to.
Oh, we will, for sure.
Dare to look into my eyes, take my hand and we'll take flight. Higher than the highest heights, everything does matter as one we celebrate life's stories every day.
Gospel Revolution.
This is the first week of our spring fall pledge drive.
Fall pledge drive. You got that right.
If your wallet in your pocket is so heavy it makes you fall over, it's time to empty it right into the gospel revolution. Because, see, you want to know where your money goes? It goes into these sort of things. When Mong gets to Burma and we have established a safe way of getting him tapes, CDs.
It's going to take a lot of stuff.
Yep. Yeah, it's going to take a bunch of stuff and we are going to start getting him everything we can to. Do you think we don't want that gospel going out in Burma like it is in Kenya? When you give into the gospel revolution, what you're giving into, this gospel going around the world, that's what you're giving into. Tell us a bit about the pledge drive, Michael.
Let me say this about anyone who gives into the gospel revolution. We have pretty well eliminated all but one reason why you should give into this nonprofit organization. We haven't added reasons why you should give. We've eliminated all reasons you should give except one. We've eliminated the reason for giving that if you give that God's going to pay your bills or God's going to give back to you. So we've eliminated that. You don't have any of the merits. Goodness gracious, we've talked you out of giving on every possible way that we can. The only people, let me say this as definitively as I can, Barris.
Say this as definitively as you can, because it won't be as short as you can. I know that, mate.
We've got to have some reason for people to give into this effort. So we've got to be definitive about the one reason why people give.
I know what it is. You're going to feel a lot better about yourself if you give. It's just that simple.
We really don't care whether you feel better about yourself.
Just wait while I pick my jaw up off the floor.
It may do that, but we really don't care one way or the other whether you feel good about it or not. This is the thing. People that give into the gospel revolution care about other people. That's the only reason. There is no other reason, Barris.
Mate, for people who are really creative but maybe don't have a bunch of money to put towards the gospel at this stage, what else can folks do to give into the gospel revolution?
Well, Barris, we talked about this a bit last week, and goodness gracious, it is whatever you're gifted to do. We so believe this God in you concept and the individuality. The strange thing about these gifts is that it makes you individual, yet at the same time, it's the same gift inside that makes us one. It is God in us. So it really depends. I mean, you know, Jackie, I bet Jackie could write us another poem. People understand. Barris has an affinity for jingles for the PowerCast, and you could probably write one for him. I'm sure there's some.
I need more jingles.
He's a jingle man. when you hear Jingle Bells this coming December, you can think of Paris.
I tell you what else we need. We need people who can build websites.
Oh, my, yes.
We have been kind of stuck on the website for a little while. It's being built in Joomla, and it's we're busier than we want to be in a lot of areas, and we'd love to have people who build websites to come on board and to help us. We need people who can do artwork. We need people who can it doesn't matter. Maybe all you can do is draw circles in the sand. Hey, let us know about that.
We'll figure out something to do with it.
We will. If all you can do is call into this number here at the show and leave your story about what the gospel revolution has done for you, what the gospel has meant in your life. If you can just do that, if you can just leave a message for the show, our number, by the way, is 234-564-0971. And if you do that, I will make sure that you also get a printed certificate, which will be the gold bar standard of wisdom. And you'll be able to put it up on your wall in a frame, and it will be a wonderful conversation starter. Say here that the gold standard of wisdom is based on 1 Corinthians chapter 2. Paul is the one who did it. He said that wisdom is, number one, the testimony of God that sees us through the cross. He also said that wisdom is a revelation of righteousness, not a requirement for righteousness. The third criteria of the gold standard of wisdom is the knowledge of what God has freely given us. Oh, man. And four, wisdom is that which gives us the ability to judge all teachings, whether they are spiritual or natural. This would be probably a good point for us to go into pillar number four, the doctrine of death and resurrection.
Yes. Speaking of gold standard, this is, I think it's interesting that this pillar is right in the middle of these seven pillars. So it's kind of like standing there.
We're exactly halfway point, aren't we?
We are. This is the pillar that stands between the doctrine of redemption, sin and forgiveness in Scripture. Then, of course, we now have the doctrine of death and resurrection, which is this magnificent pillar that holds together that and the doctrine of on the other side, which will be the future shows. The doctrine of predestination, doctrine of freedom, and the doctrine of fulfillment.
Can I say something here to our regular listeners?
You may.
Our regulars are so loyal. We know, Mike and I have talked about the fact that we are covering ground that we've only recently covered on other shows. The one that comes to mind is The Things That Have Changed Since the Cross. And this is a new series that is going to become a staple of the views of the redemptionist. Redemptionism, what is it? This is going to become a cornerstone of the gospel revolution's presentation of the gospel. And we know that we are going over some ground that we've pretty well hammered, honestly, recently. But the reason we're doing it is because this is going to be presented as a whole new series, and we so appreciate your patience with us. Thank you. Sorry, I interrupted you. We're just going through the fact, I think, Michael.
No, not at all. And let me say also, Barris, that one thing that I hear from people, I think that the guys who've heard this before have heard it before who've heard it before. That I am just convinced that what they would respond to you and I both is that even if they were still listening to this first tape they ever heard on this, after they've listened to it 40 times, they still hear new things.
Oh, that is so true. Look, Mel Martin from Georgia, he was telling me about how he got this aha moment about the last Adam. It was the last Adam he died. It was the last of the Adamic race. I never got that. I never got that when I heard you in 2000. I never got that when I heard you in 2002. I never got that when I met you in 2012 or something, 10. I never got that when I started talking with you. I never got that when I started doing what I'm doing now with you. I never got that when you bloody well said it on that show. It was only when I spoke to Mel Martin.
Mm-hmm. I hear you.
You know what I'm saying, Mike?
I do, and I've heard it so many times, and it's happened to me so many times. I've listened to my own series, Barris.
And been impressed?
And been very impressed, I'm telling you. I know the gift is there to do this, because if you saw my kitchen, you'd know where I am not gifted.
Oh, I've seen your fridge. I know what you...
I've got science projects going on.
Oh, man.
Do not criticize my science projects. They have a purpose. I'm not sure which one, but I'll guarantee you that this is the case. And of course, we also advocate the fact that hearing this news over and over does something for the soul. So, it really is amazing. You take just the gospel itself and you add the mix of the Holy Ghost, the great teacher, with it. Oh, man, you're in for a learning experience. I don't care if you've heard this series 100 times. You're going to learn something every time you put it on that you didn't know the last time. I've heard it way too many times to not know that as a fact.
I had an amazing conversation this week. I had a conversation with Shirley Ann. We'll just call her Shirley Ann. And Shirley Ann and I have been corresponding over the last, I don't know, few weeks. And finally, we got to talk on the phone. It was such a great conversation because she was only the, I don't even know if I should say this. She was only the third American that I have met who allowed me to finish my thoughts before she started talking and left space between us. And if, and I don't mean to, this is not I'm not trying to belittle our culture here in the States, but when I first came here, I recognized you've got to get in the cracks of the conversation. I don't know how else to put it from an outsider's point of view. And what I really appreciated about what Shirley Ann said to me was this. At the end of the conversation, she just said, I am going to read the Bible again in the light of what you've said and see what I come up with. Shirley Ann may never attach herself to the gospel revolution. She may never believe in the gospel. But I prize this. She said she would consider it.
Mm-hmm. That's all we're asking, Barris, is a consideration for these things. If we could open the ears of all people just to consider what this gospel actually means, consider what redemptionism is, consider what a redemptionist believes. And, you know, even if you reject it, it's going to cause a revolution because we've watched it happen.
You can't unring that bell. Once you just can't unring some bells.
You cannot. And there are people, there's religionists out there who have refused to even listen at all. And congratulations to you, because at least you know that if you ever hear it, you're going to have to think it through. So you just decide not to listen to it at all.
So this week it is is pillar number 4. We're in the dead center of the whole teachings here, and it is the doctrine of death and resurrection, which has our attention today.
Truly, what the death and resurrection of Christ means separates the gospel from all of Christianity. it also separates all of mysticism from the gospel, because there is a firm denial in mysticism and many Eastern religions of a need for a death and a resurrection. So here this pillar stands as a monument to all religions on both sides of this spectrum. You're either going to fall on the side of just considering the death of Christ as just a bloody mess that was unnecessary, or you're not going to know the full impact of this blood sacrifice. We're going to rely heavily on the scriptures, the law, the Psalms, and the prophets. We'll also be bringing out some teachings of Paul that define this death and resurrection, this fourth pillar that we're bringing out of the wisdom of God. And the first place that I would like to go is Isaiah chapter 28, verse 14 through 19. And this is very powerful understanding and insight. And it's one of my favorite references in the Old Testament to describing the termination of one covenant and the beginning of another, and actually the termination of an entire race of people and the new creation of a new race of people, a new heaven, a new earth, the entire thing. And I believe that that these verses may contain all of that in a bag of chips. We're going to see what it is. So why don't you start reading that for us, if you will?
Well, we're reading out of the King Jimmy.
Yep.
And Isaiah 28, starting at verse 14, reads, "Wherefore, hear the word of the Lord, you scornful men that rule this people, which is in Jerusalem. Because you have said, we have made a covenant with death, and with hell are we at agreement. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, it shall not come unto us. For we have made lies our refuge, and under falsehood have we hid ourselves. Therefore, this is what the Lord God says. Behold, I lay in Zion for a foundation a stone, a tried stone, a precious corner stone, a sure foundation. He that believes shall not make haste. Judgment also will I lay to the line, and righteousness to the plummet, and the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies, and the water shall overflow the hiding place. And your covenant with death shall be annulled, and your agreement with hell shall not stand. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through, then you shall be trodden down by it. From the time that it goes forth, it shall take you. For morning by morning shall it pass over, by day and by night, and it shall be a vexation only to understand the report."
What's here in these verses is the termination of a previous world. He's speaking to the Jewish people and about all of their leaders and called them scornful men, and talks about they're making a covenant with death and with hell, which I think that in the Hebrew means grave. And it says we've made our agreement, and but he says there's going to be an overflowing scourge. Now, when I started seeing these terms in the prophecies about the this and comparing it to the flood, and there's several places where it says righteousness will flood the earth. The truth of God will flood the earth as the waters cover the sea. When you start looking at this whole issue of this act of God being compared to water, water, it doesn't make any difference where you hide. Once the water comes in, it's going to get to you. It's just
well. I just noticed it says it'll even cover the hiding place.
Exactly.
Now, Isaiah. Mm-hmm. Now, shortly Isaiah knew what was written in the Psalms about you, O Lord, are a hiding place under me.
Yes. Oh, that's very good.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Now, here's the thing that these verses, I think, say to us. Not only is everything you ever trusted in previously going to be completely swept away in a flood, in a scourge of a flood, but also not just what you trusted in, but you yourself are going to be exterminated. That is what this overflowing scourge is going to do. This overwhelming judgment, which according to Isaiah always results in righteousness. That's what this sweeping declaration of righteousness is going to do. There's not going to be a place on this planet left for self-righteousness.
So when did they make this deal with death?
Well, if we stick with what Paul taught was the covenant of death that he spoke of in Corinthians, we know that that was the Ten Commandments. And when Moses came back with those Ten Commandments, they said this is the covenant they made with the law. Now, it was not what the way the law was set up, but it's the covenant they made with the law that the people of Israel said, and this shall be our righteousness, that we do and keep all of these commandments. So they made a covenant with death because the law is death. And when they said this is going to be our form of righteousness, the way we're going to be righteous is we're going to make a covenant with this law. We got a letter this past week that was a question about the statement in Hebrews about, for it is appointed unto man once to die, after that the judgment. And they were asking, so what is this judgment that comes after we die? Of course, bringing that out in Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews is trying to guide us to this death of Christ that replaced the death of all of humanity. Now, how did all humanity die? All humanity died in the body of one man who happened to also be God. How did all of humanity get judged? How did this sweeping judgment flow to everybody? Because everybody, according to Paul, was drawn into the body of Christ before. The plan is immaculate. It's just, it is so beautiful. How do you get by with saying the whole planet is going to be judged? Everybody's going to be wiped out. Every covenant that ever stood before is going to die. All of it's going to die. Then, and everybody's standing back looking at God saying, wonder how he's going to pull this one off. And there still remain a human race after this. He's going to kill everybody, destroy the law, destroy everything that we had covenant with, and yet there's going to be something on the other side. Okay, God, we're going to watch and see how you do this. What does he do? He sends Christ. The death was necessary. Please let me say this to all my mystic friends and all my Buddhist friends. The death of Christ was necessary to eliminate all that stood before in the body of one man, that all would be eradicated for all of the human race. So here we have this powerful, pivotal moment in time for the culmination of God's plan on this planet to bring all things into one. Now, we've got our like I said, our mystic friends who believe in oneness. This is better than oneness. This isn't oneness. This is one. Just one. And that's what makes this so very powerful. Watch this play out in your mind. Watch this. I'm telling you, I watched this full-length feature movie in my mind many, many times in a process of a year. I can't wait till we get it in a major Hollywood production. It is going to be amazing to follow all of these prophecies of this overwhelming scourge. It's going to sweep the whole earth. The whole earth is doomed. Everybody's going to die. And we see God being born into this whole mix. We see God being born into this whole mix that he's condemned. Why would you bring yourself into that which you have condemned? And then to watch this and all of these prophecies. I remember the prophecy about all of these angels of death gathering up God's wrath, and it's swirling the winds of the east, the winds of the north, the winds of the south, and all of them swirling around the whole planet and getting ready to rain down the wrath of God and this overwhelming scourge on the entire planet to destroy all and everything and everybody. And at that moment, you see the cross go up. And before all of this wrath could come into this planet, hovering over this planet, like the worst invader movie you've ever seen from Hollywood, hovering, waiting. And suddenly the cross goes in the air. What does God do with all of humanity? He draws all of humanity into the body of one man. We're hidden in the cleft of the rock. We are under the shadow of the wing of the Almighty. Bears, this all took place. And as this was all collecting and looming around the entire earth, you know, I almost see these things like these great big hawks of death flying with their eye fixed on the human race. And suddenly the human race disappears and there's only one human left. And instead of aiming at the humans and the planet, them all coming to this screeching mid-air halt and the winds of the world circling to where that all is funneled into one spot on a hill called Golgotha, and the power of God bringing a conclusion to all of mankind's ways, his deeds, good or bad, and bringing an absolute cataclysmic end through death. The only way to end it is through death. But the death in the mercy of God doing that through his own son is the most powerful story to ever be told on this earth.
Cause these are the days of the resurrection. Everybody saved by one election. Cure the disease called sin infection and left humanity pure perfection.
Latest videos from the Gospel Revolution? You need to.
If you're wondering why I'm not on too many PowerCasts, because I'm spending too much time on YouTube and not watching it. I'm performing videos on YouTube. And if you have not seen one of those videos, you need to go to our video channel. Just log into YouTube and type in Gospel Revolution 1, all one word, Gospel Revolution and the numeral 1. Or you can link to it from our homepage on our website, gospelrevolution.com. There's a link to our YouTube channel. So, everybody, stay in touch with us in every way. Subscribe to our newsletters and listen to our podcasts and watch our videos on YouTube. And we'll see you everywhere.
When you're feeling down or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the Gospel Revolution?
Gospel Revolution.
Once there was dinosaurs on this earth. The last dinosaur died, and they became extinct. Once there were Tasmanian devils. The last Tasmanian devil died, and they became extinct.
Many creatures have fallen that way.
Well, it seems like the Adam race.
It is extinct.
Well, let's read through this a little bit further and see if that holds up, shall we?
Let's go.
Because you have said, verse 15 of Isaiah 28, we made a covenant with death, and with the grave are we at agreement. That is, wow, wow. When the overflowing scourge shall pass through. Now, that word pass through in the Hebrew means to cross over. It shall not come unto us. You've said when the overwhelming scourge shall cross over, it shall not come unto us because we've made lies our refuge and under falsehood have we hid ourselves. Now, the only lies and falsehood he can be referring to surely is the fact that they've made a covenant with death, a lie, and with hell are we in agreement, a falsehood. And they did that through mm-hmm. taking to themselves a law, which was administration of death, which they themselves said, this shall be unto us our righteousness. It was a lie.
So they literally made death their righteousness.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it is to this day. We, you know, death is a great leveler, we say, and have other sayings. But under falsehood, we've hid ourselves therefore. Now that's what man has said. You have said this. Uh-huh. And Isaiah says, therefore, God says something different. Here's what God says. I lay in Zion for a foundation, a stone, uh-huh. a proven stone, a precious stone, a sure foundation. And then he makes a totally new statement, and he says, he that believeth, the word in Hebrew is aman, or it's the word from which we get amen. He that ameneth this, he that puts all of his faith in this, he that takes everything he's got and hangs his body off this. I'm stealing from Gene Scott. He won't make haste.
What does the term haste there mean, Barris?
It means he ain't going to hurry.
Yeah.
He knows exactly who he is, what he's there for, and he's going to do it exactly in his own time.
So this is Jesus. This is talking about Jesus, right? So he that believeth, as we've brought out before, of course, is Christ.
Yes.
Because Jesus kept pointing out, you know, if you believe, if you believe, if you believe.
Yes.
And then proved in the book of John, of course, the book of John brings out to us that nobody did believe. So the only believer was Christ. And I think this is very interesting. It gives us a great insight into Christ's belief that he would not make haste. He wouldn't be in a hurry. And how many times did Jesus say, for his time was not yet?
Wow. I didn't even think of that. That's great.
It's time. You just said it. What do you mean you never thought of it?
Yeah, I didn't use the right words. You know how you have to say a magic prayer to become, you know? I didn't use the right words. Hey, he says, judgment, verse 17, judgment also mm-hmm. will I lay to the line. And here is the thing about judgment in the Old Testament. David said, I love your judgments.
Exactly.
They're so great. Oh, God, can't get enough of them. The fact is, the judgment in the Old Testament, in the Hebrew, generally, it's not what we think it is. We call judgment a forensic term in our modern day court system, but even that is not a penalty. A judgment is, are you right or are you wrong? A penalty is, and for being wrong, you're going to have life in prison. But a judgment is declaring whether you're right or wrong. Even in modern criminal law, this is truth. Mm-hmm. And in the Old Testament, it's true also. Judgment is straightening out things.
Yes.
The word used for to the line, judgment also, I will lay to the line, is a ruler. I'm going to straighten you out.
Yeah.
And righteousness to the plummet.
So you can't say, so if you say the final judgment, which, you know, that's the term the whole world uses about the final judgment, the final judgment. So the final judgment is righteousness.
Well, it's the same thing, because what he's saying is judgment also I will lay to the line. Judgment is my ruler. It's my straight line.
Yeah.
And straight line is a horizontal thing. We use it, you know, on paper or, you know, to make a straight line. And then he says, and righteousness to the plummet. Now, you've heard of a plumb line?
Yes, that's the vertical line.
That's the vertical line. So he's saying, doesn't matter which way you want to cut and dice and slice and do this thing. Judgment, I'm going to make straight. Righteousness, I'm going to make straight. And it's all the same thing. And then he says, Michael, that the hail shall sweep away the refuge of lies, and the waters shall overflow the hiding place. We've mentioned that already. And your covenant with death shall be annulled. So these people have said, we've made a covenant with death. And these, he's identified who they are. These are the leaders in Jerusalem.
Yes.
And your agreement with hell shall not stand.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. You know, I used to work in a place called the prayer rooms. And we used to try and break, by prayer counseling, we'd break their agreements with death. And God says, really? Mm. Look, I can just break that in one fell swoop.
Yes.
And your agreement with hell shall not stand. When the overflowing, that word for overflowing is just conquering, really. Walked right over. When the mm-hmm. overflowing or galloping or flooding or when the over or even that word in Hebrew means also to cleanse, according to James Strong. When the overflowing scourge. Now, this word scourge means only one thing. It means a lash. It means literally a cat and nine tails, a lash. Exactly what? Who else do we know who was scourged?
Mm-hmm.
Let me see. When the overflowing scourge shall cross over. Now, in English, it's pass through, but in Hebrew, it is cross over.
Yeah.
What on earth could a crossover mean? Then you shall be trodden down. He's talking to humans. He's talking to humans of the Adamic race. These are the leaders in Jerusalem. He says, you'll be trodden down. Or actually, what it really means is, you'll be squished.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I really love these verses, of course, when I originally taught this in the Seven Pillars of Wisdom, because it brings out so clearly this scourging, the term scourge. And what you're bringing out here is that at the point of scourging would be the crossover. The crossover would begin at the scourging. So we're talking about a crossing over from the first Adam, and of course Jesus being the last Adam. He's the last Adam because he's the last human being, the last one of all of that generation.
I love it.
And this generation shall not pass until all of these things be fulfilled. If you don't understand the termination of that generation, the termination of God's original creation, if God did not terminate his original creation, how can there be a new creation? None of it makes sense until you accept this powerful crossover, if you will, as the terminology is being used here in Isaiah. And we see that this termination of this generation. How many times have you and I heard, and it's still, you know, and this generation shall not pass until all of these things be fulfilled. Uh-huh. And we're still looking for a fulfillment. We're still looking at what generation. But you see, that term generation literally means all of mankind. It's not a particular group. I admit that I don't understand all that died about mankind when the human race died in Christ. This one thing I do understand, though, the thing that died was the possibility of ever being corrupted again. We pass from corruption to incorruption. This is the teaching that Paul gives about even these verses also when he brings it into the new covenant understanding.
And then he says in verse 19 of Isaiah 28, he says, from the time that it goes forth, it will take you.
Mm-hmm. It will take you. I love that statement.
Now, those words, from the time it will go forth, that could be just as equally very perfectly translated from the day of the crossover.
Once it starts.
You're a goner.
I love it. There's a verse where Paul made the statement that the love of Christ constraineth us. And that term constraineth is the same as this shall take you. When I looked at that, I don't remember exactly what led me to this conclusion, but when I read that, what I saw was this funnel. And, you know, a funnel is wide open at the top and very constrained at the bottom. When it says that the love of Christ constraineth us, and then it says for, for if one died, then all are dead. So people always taught that verse, the love of Christ constrains. Well, the love of Christ constrains me to feed the poor. The love of Christ constrains me. It was just all a bunch of jibber jabber. But when I read that in context, and now I see this in Isaiah, I see the love of Christ from the beginning of this, that the love of Christ, in like this big funnel, no matter where you fall in the funnel, you're all going out the same hole. It doesn't make it's out of your control. When if you pour milk in a funnel, the milk no longer has control over where it's going. It is taken from there to a certain point. And this is the very same thing that Paul said about the love of Christ constraineth us.
It lays hold on you. It's like something which is magnetized. You ain't getting out of it.
No way.
So verse 19 of Isaiah 28 says, from the day of the crossover, you're constrained. You're a goner.
Yes.
Now, the next phrase is fascinating because it says this, dawn to dawn.
Mm-hmm.
The crossover, dawn to dawn, the crossover. What on earth does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
By day and by night.
Yep. One full day.
It shall be a vexation only to understand the report.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Mike, it is saying from one dawn to the next dawn, mm-hmm. the crossover will happen.
Yeah.
The dawn of what? How about the dawn of
creation? I'm loving this, Paris. This is so good.
Is this good or what? How about the dawn of creations?
Exactly.
We have from the dawn of the first creation to the dawn of the new creation.
There's so many contrasts to this.
From the dawn of the first creation to the dawn of the second creation, the crossover happens.
Yeah.
By day and by night, it will be a vexation only to understand the report.
Yeah. What does the term vexation mean?
It means it really just screws with your mind, mate. Wow. Can I say that here on air?
So what it actually means is it'd be hidden from you.
Well, the actual Hebrew word is agitating fear. I'm all got up about this, and I don't know why I'm all head up about this.
Conveying that it's there for you to understand, but you can't.
Oh, that's so good. John, you're going to John. I know where you're going here. Well, just hold up a minute and you take us right the way there. So from dawn to dawn, the crossover exists. By day and by night, it'll be a vexation only to understand the report.
Mm-hmm.
What on earth does this mean? Well, let's work it backwards. The report. Where else do we hear that word report? How about Isaiah 53, for no one has believed our report.
Yes.
Now let's work that backwards again. It'll be a vexation or an agitating fear.
To understand.
No one can understand the report, and they will be agitated and fearful.
It's exactly what Isaiah said. It's exactly what is reported in the New Testament about the same event.
And let's then look at the previous phrase, by day and by night. How about what you have made really clear, Michael, that if you can break my covenant with the sun mm-hmm. of day and night, then you can break this covenant.
Oh, exactly. We just went through that before, and what a powerful thing, you know, for him to say that what I'm about to do, I will establish a king. And it's speaking of Christ in that prophecy and from the throne of David. And he said that now go ahead, try to break this covenant. And once you break the covenant I have with the daylight and the covenant I have with the nighttime, it's me who set the light in the day and the darkness to be at night. And he said, if you can break that covenant that I made with daylight and dark, you'll be able to break this covenant that I have with the one I've appointed to set up to take over the throne of David. Now, we know that from the teachings in the New Testament that Jesus did take that throne. And that covenant with that man cannot be broken. This is the big beef that I've had with all of Christianity. And they, Barris, this is another one of those moments that just blew me away and blew the people away I was teaching. When I stood up and told them that they had no covenant with God. God did not make a covenant with you. Oh my, you just, I might as well have taken a 2x4 and hit each one of them in the head with it. And told them, you don't, God didn't make a covenant with you. And I said, now all of you are sitting there very disappointed. You're thinking this man's either lost his mind, or if he hasn't, then I have no covenant with God. Oh my God, I am lost. I am undone. What am I going to do? I need to be in covenant with God. God needs to make a covenant with me. I need to keep this covenant with God. And that was the whole thing when I, of course, finished my rant to tell them that God did not make a covenant with them. I told them that he made it with Christ, and that the covenant was for them, not with them. And that is, again, a redemptionist view of the gospel. This is what redemptionism is. It is this principle also, that God did not make this covenant with man. He made it with one man that was applicable to it. It's going to take you. It's going to take. It doesn't make any difference what you do. The agreement that I've made with my son, it's going to take you. And it's going to take you. Where's it going to take you? It's going to take you from being genetically born of the first Adam to being genetically born of the second Adam or the last Adam, to where that you now no longer even have a possibility for corruption. If you have no possibility for corruption, what need is there for a law? It just is, it makes no sense. If I am incorruptible, then there should be no law to govern the points that will make me corrupted. There's incorruptibility. To apply law to an incorruptible person is water off a duck's back is not even here the analogy that I'm looking for, but it is water off a duck's back when you try to put law on an incorruptible person. It's water off a duck's back. It has no meaning, has no effect.
So, Michael, now we've run out of time, mate.
Well, if you wouldn't talk so much.
oh, you little blatherer. Oh, really? I'm the one talking. Okay, I got that. But next week we're going to finish, and this is the only one we haven't done in one show. Family, we're going to finish the
Too good to try to rush through.
The doctrine of death and resurrection.
Yes. This is the pinnacle of all of these pillars, so we really need to take the time that it deserves.
So I'm in a steakhouse in Melbourne. I was down there, and Vlado's Steakhouse it was in Melbourne. My God, I don't know how he did it. Vlado was a guy in Melbourne who second biggest Greek city in the world, you know that? Don't shake your head at me. People can't hear it.
I did not know that. That's my head shaking now.
Yeah, Melbourne is after Athens, is the second biggest Greek city in the world. And I have Americans say, oh, but do Australians understand multiculturalism? I think we have a slight grasp on it. Anyway, I'm sitting there, and he makes meat. All he does is cooks meat. And I'm past the, what do you call it here? The entree here you call the main course. The beginning thing is I got a couple of sausages, and they're made in-house. After that, I have something else, and after that, I have the steak. And after that, somebody's got to just drag me out of there because I can't even waddle.
Wow.
And that's how I'm feeling right now, mate. I'm feeling like I'm halfway through and I've just got to take a breath and a glass of wine or something. This has been so meaty, Michael.
It really has.
This has been so good.
Yes, Bears, and thank you for going through the Strong's with us and giving us these definitions of these words, which when you take that and keep it in context, what powerful insights that just erupt all over the place. Because once you have redemptionism in place in your brain, these things make sense. And if you are on either side of the cross, and let me say again as we close this out, this is so vitally important. I don't want to rush over it. We need to take another session to do this, because this is where this all falls, is on this death and resurrection. You have all of Christianity. May I repeat, all of Christianity who has missed the death and the resurrection and what it means.
You don't know that. There's 40,000 varieties. You don't know that each one of them.
All of them that I know of, and nobody's presented another one to me, who says that the work of the cross is the culmination of all things. None of them.
Here is another way that you can give into the gospel revolution. All you got to do is show us one out of 40,000
exactly
brands. Just that'd be a way to give.
Exactly. Show us one that places all the culmination of the scriptures at the cross, and you will have proven that we are wrong. And that is the come. Now they're all going to say, "Oh yes," and then they're going to add if and but or maybe. And we don't add anything to this. There's no ifs, ands, buts, or maybes to the cross. And the other side of this, again, that I want to repeat before we go, is the side of the mysticism of spirituality. And that is, they do not believe that the death of Christ was a necessity at all. So you've got those who missed the understanding of the death and the resurrection of Christ. And the other side of it is those who don't believe that it was necessary at all. Some question whether or not it even happened, much less the necessity of it. But you will not find a mystic that has anything to do with a need for redemption. This is redemptionism.
One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God above and Father of all. One hope in a life that was given, a new life arisen, one Spirit inside of us all.
You know, it's not the people who agree with us, it's the people who question us that help us make progress. That's how we've done it since day one. What are your thoughts on what we've just been talking about? Why don't you call me on area code 234-564-0971 and let us know what you think about that. Else you can just email us at freedom@gospelrevolution.com. That was freedom@gospelrevolution.com. What do you think about that? So, now let's just hold everything that we've said in this up to the gold standard of wisdom.
Let's do that, Bears.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. The first criteria of the gold standard of wisdom. Wisdom is the testimony of God that sees us through the cross.
Well, my goodness. Everything that we went through here in Isaiah chapter 28, verse 14 through 19, he says, from the time that it goeth forth, it shall take you. This is God's testimony. It's not what you take. It's the fact that it takes you. There's not a place that you can hide, nor can your doctrines hide from this. This is a testimony of God for sure.
Criteria number two of the gold standard of wisdom in 1 Corinthians chapter 2 is wisdom is a revelation of righteousness, not a requirement for righteousness.
Again, just here in Isaiah 28, verse 14 through 19, we found a judgment that results in righteousness. And this is not man's judgment. And the judgment is righteousness. You say, well, what is the judgment? The judgment is righteousness. It is not a righteousness that is required. It is a righteousness that has rained down from heaven and has overtaken everyone on this planet.
1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9 to 12 gives us the third criteria of the gold standard of wisdom. Wisdom is the knowledge of what God has freely given us.
Well, righteousness here is the free gift. And again, it shall take you. You're not taking it. It shall take you. Man, I love that statement. And it shall take you. And let me tell you, it has taken us. And what we teach in redemptionism, as redemptionists, we teach what has taken us, not what you take. And again, this is met the gold standard, I believe, Ferris, that Paul laid down for us for determining the wisdom of God.
Criteria number four of the gold standard of wisdom. Wisdom is that which gives us the ability to judge all teachings, whether they are spiritual or natural.
Well, here we're talking about death and resurrection, and we are saying that man had nothing to do with this. What is a natural teaching? A natural teaching is basically cause and effect religion. Man does this, God responds. This is not God responding. This is God taking action to declare the whole planet righteous. So we can determine from that that this is truly a teaching that is the wisdom of God, and it is not the wisdom of man, because there's not one place here that we've found an instruction for man to follow to be able to receive it.
So how does this compare with what mainline Christianity teaches, Michael?
Well, it is everything just the opposite. It's their testimony. It's that God did this, and again, where Christianity perverts, see, they would not disagree with any of this. It is when they add the if and but or maybe to it, and they take it away from a God testimony. They take it away from a righteousness that is revealed to a righteousness that you have to work for. In other words, it becomes their testimony. It becomes a righteousness they have to work for. It becomes some, they can't see the things that God has given freely. It is always something that they labor for, work for, pray for, give for, tithe for, live right for, all the way down the line. So Christianity misses it on all points when it comes to that which is freely given. And Christianity misses it completely in judging all teachings. They do not judge their teachings based on this criteria, and all of their teaching falls into man's wisdom. All of their teaching falls into man's wisdom. They might start out with the wisdom of God by saying Jesus died on the cross for the sins of the entire human race, but, and that's where they fall from grace, and they go back under the law, and they leave the work of the gospel an absolute mess.
Jesus loves me, this I know.
Here now is Reverend Franklin Graham.
It not only is a person condemned to hell, they are thrown into hell, Bill. That's how serious
this
is.
Isn't that a cruel action?
A cruel action. What's cruel is a person that rejects Almighty God.
What about people who don't know the Bible? See, some evangelicals say that you can't get to heaven unless you are born again through Jesus Christ. But there, throughout history, have been people who have never even heard of Jesus Christ.
And that has been an argument, Bill, from day one. Nobody will have an excuse when they stand before God.
Let me give you a really stark example. You know, there are millions killed in the Holocaust, Jewish people, who don't accept Jesus Christ as God. But they were good people. Good innocent people, children, massacred. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that they're not in heaven. Right. The innocent people were killed without being revealed, yes, or didn't know about Jesus or didn't believe in him because of their parents, mm-hmm, or something else.
Not only is a person condemned to hell, they are thrown into hell, Bill.
Can't imagine that they're damned. I can't imagine.
Not only is a person condemned to hell, they are thrown into hell, Bill. Bill, I'm not the judge. God is the judge.
Right.
But when we stand before him on that, forget the children in the Holocaust.
They can't forget them.
Forget the children in the Holocaust.
They can't forget them.
Forget the children of the Holocaust. They are thrown into hell, Bill. That's how serious
this is.
Isn't that
a cruel action?
What's cruel is a person that rejects Almighty God. I'm not the judge.
Welcome to Pigeon Religion.
Really, it's for the birds.
Well, don't you know about the bird? Well, everybody knows that the bird is the word. Well, a bird, bird, the bird's the word. Well, a...
Gospel Revolution.
And it doesn't matter, cause the cross already won the war. I'm learning to run freely, understanding just how he sees me, and it makes me love him more and more.
So it is that we must leave you, friends. We love you one and all, and we especially thank all of you who, with any support whatsoever, financial or just your gifts, you keep this message of grace and peace going out every week. If you'd like to join them in increasing our coverage of this gospel, call our office at area code 321-220-4373 and speak to young Jeffrey. He loves it when I call him Lad. He just loves it. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply call us on area code 234-564-0971 and leave your voicemail. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and we're always up for a Facebook chat at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Thanks to Marcel Roos in the Netherlands, all the gospel all the time is being broadcast 24/7 at myradiostream.com/gospelrevolution. And so, it's good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, from the spit-polished Gospel Revolution studios in Nashville.
And it is good night from Michael Williams right here in Houston, Texas. Thank you, guys. We do love you to pieces, and we love every one of those pieces. I know you like that, Beres. That's why I said it again.
There's only three or four times in this whole show when you look at my eyes and they're going, So remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we're going to do the same thing all over again, except without Michael, hopefully.
Then it will be better.
Okay, buddy. Whew, that was fun.
A lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thanks, buddy.
I always look forward to this, and I'm never disappointed.
Is it always like this around here, Mildred?
Always. Oh, and it's so embarrassing.
No, I love it. It reminds me of home.
Looking at the world through stained glass window, dividing lines define our kind of truth. But bits of colored glass couldn't pass for a rainbow or the beauty of its ever-blending hues. Likened to a point of view that I can understand, the Father set his hand to write a song. Then down through the ages, notes on scattered pages, and pulled it all together. When the final age had dawned, every wind, everyone, come and see what God has done. He took his firstborn son and he hung him on a tree. He bore the sin and pain and hung his head in shame. And pass through the flames for you and me. focusing on clues, you can lose your direction and miss the forest for the trees for a time. But a flood and a boat and a many-colored coat led me to this rendezvous with all mankind. Every wind, everyone, don't you see the harvest's come and gone? We've all become fellow heirs with Christ. The first man died in sin, and we were all inside of him. The second Adam took us in. We all died the second death, and then we've been to hell and back again, and entered into life. Looking at the world through a stained glass window, dividing lines define all kinds of truth. But bits of broken glass could never pass for a rainbow or the beauty of its ever-blending hues.
Listen in.